Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Jane and Charlotte, for organizing this library lunch. The topic I chose is climate change, Copenhagen and beyond, mainly focusing on Copenhagen. I'm not sure I will be able to respond to what Mark was saying, whether this snow is related to climate change. I would say no. One of the bad things of the fashion of climate change is that whatever happened, we say, well, this is related to climate change. And I think this doesn't help. But of course, there are some changes in weather patterns in different parts of the world that are already affecting the people. And this is particularly the case in the Pacific, with not only the rise of seawater level, but also with the increase of web tides and other weather phenomena. This is the case also in the Horn of Africa and Great Lakes, where people are already moving from one place to another as internally displaced peoples, in some case from one country to another, because of the change in rainfall patterns and others. But I would like to focus our conversation on Copenhagen. What I planned to share with you is shortly what the WCC has been doing on climate change for some years now, why Copenhagen was so relevant and why was it in every or in many headlines in the news. So have you heard about Copenhagen COP15, all of you, haven't you? Yes, okay. And then I would like to share an assessment of the outcome of Copenhagen, especially focusing on the Copenhagen Accord, and what's the way forward, what we think should be the way forward. And you have an outline of the presentation, so I will follow this points mainly. I will not refer to all of them, and some of them I will further develop. Just to start with, I think it's important to realize the WCC has been working on climate change with this name and with a program on climate change since 1988. This is when the program was established as a follow-up of the work on sustainable communities and in the preparation towards the Seoul Convocation in 1990. We're celebrating 20 years now, on justice, peace, and integrity of creation. This was one of the components, and it is one of the covenants of the GPIC convocation focusing on climate change. So the WCC has been working on this for more than 20 years. In the early 90s, the working group on climate change was established, and it's still functioning now, and with some of the same members and, of course, some of the new ones. Immediately, there were two main issues, I would say, that were the core of the program. On the one hand, sharing of churches and ecumenical initiatives. This is what the churches are doing in relationship to climate change. And later, what are specialized ministries doing? What are ecumenical organizations doing in relationship to climate change? And sharing what they were doing was related to small projects on rainfall harvesting, for instance, but sharing also liturgical resources or Bible studies or materials for Sunday schools. So sharing a variety of materials and documents on what the churches are doing in different parts of the world in relationship to climate change in the context of care for creation. So this was the context of the project. But from the very beginning, in this framework of the GPIC, the relationship between caring for creation and justice issues, peace issues, and all other related issues, like economic issues, for instance, development, and so on. the other aspect of the project, so one sharing churches initiatives, the other aspect was advocacy. An advocacy focusing at the UN. And this is why there was a very strong WCC delegation in 1992 already. 1992 was the Earth Summit, the UN Conference on Environment and Development, the one that adopted, among other instruments, the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. So at that time, there was already a 100-people delegation in Rio in 1992. And there were a lot of work being done towards Rio. I was in Uruguay at that time working at a Franciscan center, and I remember we organized 3 meetings in Montevideo, Buenos Aires, and Porto Alegre towards this Rio Earth Summit that was so relevant for those working for an environment and for development, and somehow bringing together these two issues. And in the coming years and decades, other issues were also brought to the discussion on climate change. Human rights issues, economic issues, political issues that are now part of the agenda. So in 1995, it was the first conference of parties. This is COP1. And the WCC participated at that time with a very small delegation at COP1. And since 1995, there have been WCC delegations participating in all COPs, in all conference of parties of the Framework Convention on Climate Change. And so last year in Copenhagen was COP15 after all these previous ones in different parts of the world. So the WCC has been taking this advocacy dimension of its work quite seriously. And as we have been there since the beginning, we have had the possibility to present a WCC statement at the high-level segment of the conference. This is the last 2 or 3 days of the conference when heads of states, ministers on environment, development, economy, prime ministers are coming to the COP. Now, so we have the possibility where some of the few, no more than 5 or 6 NGOs, that have the possibility to address this high-level segment. And we have been doing so not in all COPs, but at least in the last 5 and also in some previous ones. Now, what is the policy on the WCC on climate change? It's a very clear policy, and we have, I'm not going to go into detail into this, but 3 recent statements, 2007, 2008, and 2009, focusing on the Kyoto Protocol. The Kyoto Protocol is the instrument that make operational the Framework Convention. So the Framework Convention of the UN on Climate Change says, well, what is the challenge of climate change? What should states be doing? Because it's addressed to states. And the protocol, it's a legally binding instrument that says, well, what states should do or must do to address climate change. And there are specific commitments. And the first commitment period of the Kyoto Protocol ends in 2012. And this is why COP15 was so relevant. Because it was supposed to have an agreement from the whole international community on what will be the commitments for the second period starting in 2013. So coming back to the statements, we had one statement on the Kyoto Protocol saying it's good, but it's not enough because of the challenges that we have come to learn about climate change. We have a statement on global warming issued in 2008, and another one on eco-justice and ecological debt issued last year. So this is the policy, the framework policy we're working in the WCC. Now, why the COP15 was so relevant? I already mentioned the importance of agreeing on the second commitment period of the Kyoto Protocol and deciding on what to do, whether to have a second commitment period or to have a new instrument to apply the convention, but there were also other challenges or concerns. What will happen? What will be the attitude of main emitters today, like China and India, who are not compelled by the Kyoto Protocol to reduce emissions because they are not considered in the time of the Kyoto Protocol, 1997, industrialized countries. So they're not part of what in the Kyoto Protocol are called Annex I countries, and this is a list of the industrialized countries who are obliged to reduce their emissions. But what would be the attitude of China, India, Brazil on this? Another challenge was, or another expectation, to put it in other terms, what will be the attitude of the U.S. under the new Obama administration? Obama, who had already presented to the Congress a proposal to reduce their emissions 17% by 2020 compared to 2005 levels. To give you an idea, he is proposing 17% for 2020 in relationship to 2005. The ecumenical movement and the global civil society was asking for 40% reduction for 2020, but compared to 1990 levels. So it's very little what Obama has proposed for the time being. So in Copenhagen, the WCC delegation, and you may know that in the last years it has not only been a WCC delegation, but a wider ecumenical delegation, where churches, regional ecumenical organizations, but especially specialized ministries from Europe have come with hundreds of partners to Copenhagen. So in Copenhagen, we had, in the WCC delegation, where we had many representatives from churches who asked to be part of the WCC delegation, about 85 people. And then those who are recognized by the UNFCCC, the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change Secretariat, as NGO who can register people are, for instance, Christian Aid, Bread for the World, ACT has recently registered as well. And, for instance, Christian Aid, Bread for the World, they have brought about 100 participants, each of them, partners from the South, mainly from the Global South. So I must say that the ecumenical delegation was about 300 people. But then we have a lot of young people that were working as volunteers for different activities in the NGO place, the Klima Forum. That was a place where NGOs could meet at different demonstrations. In the demonstration on December the 12th, there were 100,000 people marching, and there was a strong ecumenical delegation as part of it. And then we had a boat, they call it a boat, but then I realized it was a cruise of 1,500 people coming from Oslo to Copenhagen, most of them young people. This was wonderful. I was able to be in this cruise. No? And I coordinated a seminar on climate change and liberation, Latin American liberation theology. And there were 1,500 people, most of them young people, from Norwegian Church Aid, and I don't remember its name, a very important, powerful, secular NGO. So these two, Norwegian Church Aid and this other one, brought together 1,500 people, and most of them were part of this ecumenical delegation. So I would say we had more than 1,000 ecumenical participants in Copenhagen. From the NGO, you might have read, there were about 45,000 people. And this was one of the causes of the chaos, because the venue, the place where we were meeting, had a capacity of only 15,000. And they gave 45,000 passes. So in the second week, some people were waiting for hours to register, including our former general secretary and our present general secretary, who waited for 2 hours, and they said, it is enough from a Kenya and Norwegian perspective, they agree and they say, this is enough. So they went back and they didn't enter to our side event. But there were some people who did register, who waited for 7 hours. And this was because of the bad organization of the secretariat, because they knew beforehand how many people were registering. Now, how did we prepare for Copenhagen? We established in early 2009, in February, an ecumenical climate secretariat in Copenhagen, hosted by Dan Cecheid, supported mainly by APRODEF, but also by some U.S. Churches and agencies like Presbyterian Church, Chartwell Service, by the WCC, and the idea of this secretariat was to coordinate the whole ecumenical movement participation in Copenhagen. And I think we're having the evaluation in February, but I think this was a very helpful experience. And I hope we could have this kind of experience and in the coming COP that will be in Cancun, November 2010. A completely different weather condition from Copenhagen. So we had the secretariat that coordinated quite well, and we had almost every 2 weeks Skype conversations. I traveled sometimes to Copenhagen to meet with them. They participated in WCC working group meetings and so on. So this was a very helpful instrument to coordinate all the different things, starting with accommodation, because the government of Denmark blocked the hotel, so it was not possible to at the beginning at least, to book a room without going through this agreed organizations. Then we had meetings over the year to reflect on Copenhagen in our working group on climate change in May. We already started to work on an ecumenical vision on climate change beyond Copenhagen. We had meetings in Fiji with the church leaders on the issue of resettlement. I met with the people of AACC in Nairobi on their participation in this. There was a letter from the General Secretary in September to encourage churches to participate in different activities, especially the Countdown to Copenhagen campaign, an ecumenical campaign that we had over the year, and the bell ringing. I will come later to this. And then in the Advocacy Week in New York in November, we had the issue of climate displaced peoples as one of the three topics, and the advocacy exercise was on this. So there were many activities, but I think it's also important to highlight that when I'm talking about these activities, most of them are not only WCC activities, but are ecumenical activities. And in some cases, even going beyond the ecumenical movement or circle, I think I can put here Globethics. No, I think it's wider than ecumenical, because we had a working group on climate justice that produced a declaration at the end of the year where we had not only Christians but also Muslim and people coming from the secular world working on this issue. So most of these activities should not be seen as only WCC, although we have been participating, but also in a networking mood, I would say, that has been part of the strategy that we have followed, not only because of the lack of resources, but also because of the need of coordination with many actors. Now, what we did in Copenhagen, I told already about this delegation, the main focus was to have advocacy, and some members of the delegations were also members of their official country delegations, so we knew what was going on, at least in some regions. And we had to do this, to coordinate this. Every day we had a coordinating meeting in the morning with those who were able to enter the Bella Center, the venue, and after that we were meeting in Dan Cecheid with representatives from the wider ecumenical movement. And here these are APRODEF in Europe, who's playing a very strong role, churches in Europe also, for instance, in this board from Oslo, all the Lutheran Norwegian bishops came. All the Lutheran bishops were in Copenhagen for 2 days, not for this weekend, where we had most of the ecumenical activities. Then we had from the U.S., from Canada, we had the moderator of the United Church of Canada. We had general secretaries of AACC, of PCC. We had from Latin America, we have representatives from the churches, from civil society as well, who asked to be registered and the WCC. So it was a wide coordination with a strong link also to the Caritas and SITSE from the Roman Catholic side. SITSE, it's the parallel to APRODEF, a little wider because it includes U.S. as well. Because both of ecumenical movement or WCC related, and we have focused on climate justice. So this was the coordination for advocacy on this. There was a special program from the 13th or 12th to the 15th for VIPs, and here we have bishops, general secretaries, and others with the different activities. We had the handovers of the signatures, and this is a very nice YouTube video. Desmond Tutu handing the signatures to Ivo de Boer, the head of the UNFCCC secretariat, and then dancing hip-hop with Outlandish, because this was a concert. And there were 500,000 signatures collected in the campaign. And I think this was very powerful. It was done in the square in front of the city hall. So it was quite relevant, I think. We had this concert of Outlandish, a very nice Danish group that sung, among other songs, Solo le pido a Dios. This is a very well-known Argentinian song, and they sang it in different languages, quite nice. We had the ecumenical celebration with the Queen there, and the Archbishop of Canterbury preaching, a very good message on not to be afraid. I think it was very good. And we had hundreds of church leaders in this celebration, and also some representatives from other religions, like Buddhists, Muslims. I don't know whether they were Jews. Then the celebration ended with the bell ringing. I hope you heard about the bell ringing campaign, because I think this was one of the most interesting initiatives we had. The cathedral in Copenhagen rang the bell 350 times, and churches were asked all over the world to ring the bells. And what we thought at the beginning, or someone told me at the beginning, this will be irrelevant. Why don't you do important advocacy things? I think, at least in my perspective, this became a very powerful message, also because of the controversy that created in Denmark, especially Dean Anders, who's the dean of the cathedral, received a strong attack from the right-wing party, and there was also a very strong controversy in Switzerland because of this, saying churches should not be involved in politics. They should not ring the bells on this. But we got thousands of churches all over the world, I think about 27 countries, if I'm not wrong, ringing their bells. And one of the challenges, perhaps if I have time I will come back to this at the end, I think one of the challenges we have now is to keep this momentum, how to keep these churches who not only rang their bells but organized vigils or prayers. Or different, some churches saying, well, we don't have bells in our church because in our denomination, what can we do? Or we're planning to do this. So how to keep them in this movement? Then we had a very good, I think, press conference where we had Tutu, Reverend Tofika Falani from Tuvalu, and Bishop Sophie Peterson from Greenland. And Sam Kobia moderated the press conference. And I think it was very good because our concern earlier was this will only be focused on Tutu, but Sam was able to ask the others, well, what do you think about this question that was posed? So I think that was good. There was a lobby dinner with key negotiators where church leaders, general secretaries participated. And they told us, because none of us, neither Mark or Juan or me were able to be there. There was a closed dinner. But they told us it went well. And there were representatives of the US, UK, Sweden, Ethiopia, and other countries. And Sam Kobia, on behalf of church leaders and general secretaries, delivered a message there. Then we had a side event on climate justice there in the venue for those who were able to enter. It was quite well attended, 150 participants focusing on climate change, climate justice, with from the WCC side, Tofika Falani from Tuvalu, Joy Kennedy from Canada, from Caritas side, there was a Caritas WCC joint event. There was the president of Caritas Europa participating. I think that was good. And then we had the WCC statement presented to the high-level segment. I told you we were about 8 in the delegation for the second week. We only received 20 passes. And for the high-level segment, for the whole delegation, we received one pass. And this was, I say it again, in my perspective, a failure of the secretariat of UNFCCC. So the message, the statement of the WCC was delivered by someone from Dunchurch 8. You normally ask one from the country to deliver this message. There was a comprehensive coverage of all these activities by WCC Communications, and I think this is something I would like to thank Mark, Juan, also those who stayed here, like Annegret, Olivier, and others, because we wouldn't have been able to deliver in Copenhagen without all this communication support. Before Copenhagen, with a new website, all of you know about it, so I will not talk about it, but go to oikomene.org, how do you say this? / climate change, and you will see Countdown to Climate Justice, where we had the Countdown to Copenhagen campaign, Time for Creation and Praying for Creation, the Bell Ringing Initiative, links to Tick, Tick, Tick campaign, a broad campaign, and the Interreligious Declaration. There's another page on WCC in Copenhagen where you can listen to many of these presentations I mentioned. Also to the theological seminar that we had on Tuesday, where we had presentations, among others, of our present general secretary. And there were 7 news releases and stories. So I will not go through them, but I think this was very important. And you have the titles here, so you can go to look at them. Because I think this summarized quite well the different activities, and you can go to some of the presentations that are already there and listen to most of them. And immediately after Copenhagen, we released the climate change update, number 49. This is prepared by David Hallman, one of the consultants who work with us, on an assessment of Copenhagen. So now I will come shortly, because I want to have some time for questions too. What were the results of Copenhagen? First, there was something in written. It's called the Copenhagen Accord. And it was mainly negotiated by 5 countries, USA, China, India, Brazil, and South Africa, and then opened for signatures. It's not a binding document, and we as WCC, with the ecumenical movement and with the wide civil society movement, we were advocating for a fair, binding, and ambitious deal in Copenhagen. It's not binding. It's asking for voluntary reductions. And if you go to the document in the website, it's quite easy to access it. It's Copenhagen Accord at UNFCCC website. At the last page, it's open, so it's it's a chart, and you have country, and what are the commitments. And for the time being, it's in blank. So countries are asked to respond, what are their commitments. So if the U.S. continue to say 17% for 2020, it will be okay. And the deadline is January 31st to send these commitments. But there are already some reactions to this, as you may have heard. that the president of Bolivia is hosting a meeting in April to respond to this, because there were some countries that were very unhappy, if not angry, with the agreement. I liked very much the presentation of the representative of Tuvalu. He said, if I, and I'm almost quoting him, if I can use biblical terms, this is like receiving 30 coins of silver to betray our country. Tuvalu will not sign the accord. There were very strong comments against the accord also by Bolivia, Venezuela, Cuba, Sudan, who was moderating the G77. Now Ban Ki-moon is calling all countries to sign this agreement. And EU is also now asking countries to sign, although at the beginning was not so happy because has not been involved in the earlier negotiations. And I think there's a common, from the civil society, from the ecumenical movement, a common rejection of the of this accord. It is not what we were expecting. It is not fair. It is not ambition, and it's not binding. Therefore, we need to continue struggling for this. What are some of the problems with the accord? One is that it was, as I said, negotiated by these five countries, somehow jeopardizing, and this has been said by many, the multilateral negotiations of the UN. And some are saying, well, as we have the G20, this is another G5 plus some, that will be composed by the most powerful nations of the world against the poorest nations. And this was said by many states also, not only by the civil society. A second problem is that it has created quite a lot of problems in the regions, for instance, in Africa with South Africa, in Latin America with Brazil, who were part of this, and so therefore creating divisions in the regions. China, that normally was together with the G77, also creating this the discussion. Some countries like Ethiopia trying to sign it and to be proactive in a positive way toward the accord because of their coming elections and so on. So it was quite difficult. But there are some positive aspects, I think, as well. From Copenhagen, also, well, not so much from the accord, but I would say from Copenhagen. A positive aspect was the civil society mobilization. Over the year, I think this was quite relevant. In many places, 350.org organized in October 24th many activities in relationship to the maximum of parts per million in the atmosphere. Demonstrations were held in many countries. There is an ongoing awareness on climate change issues in going beyond the fashion of climate change, I think. A second positive aspect, I think, is the involvement of churches and the ecumenical movement. Our activities in Copenhagen, I think, went very well, but especially through the bell ringing campaign and other and the countdown to Copenhagen campaign, we had more churches joining these efforts and focusing on the, what I think it's quite crucial, not only on the advocacy or political dimension, but also on the ethical and spiritual dimension. And I think this is something that we need to continue working on. From the government side, I think it's positive to have U.S. again sitting on the table. You may remember, under the Bush administration, the U.S. quit the Kyoto Protocol. It was signed by Al Gore under Clinton's administration, but then they quit the Kyoto Protocol. Now, again, they're sitting on the table of the negotiations, not with as ambitious targets as we would like, but at least starting to talk about this. It's also positive to have China, and my personal opinion in the messages from Obama and from China, I would say I was quite deceived from Obama's message in Copenhagen. I was expecting much more from him. from China, I think it was a good message. It is true that China has been blamed by many as being the cause of not having reached a binding agreement. I don't share this opinion, and I'm not the only one who don't share this. There are many responsibilities. Of course, China has some responsibilities, but there are many responsibilities from the U.S., but also from Denmark on why a binding agreement was not reached. I can give you more details on this later if needed. It was important to have 110 heads of state in Copenhagen. This shows it is an important issue. I think most of them were thinking they would sign an agreement, and this was not the case, and this is why they came. But, this showed their concern about this. Now, very short, and I will end with looking forward. And as I said earlier, in the Working Group on Climate Change, we said already in May, the ecumenical vision goes beyond Copenhagen, because no matter what happens in Copenhagen, the most vulnerable communities, the poorest communities, will continue to suffer the consequences of climate change. And as churches, we need to respond to this. So we will continue to plead for a fair, ambitious, and a binding treaty to be operative as of 2013. And this is also shared by many civil society coalitions, I would say. We need to build on the momentum of the civil society mobilization at large and of the ecumenical movement and churches. And we need to look ways to overcome the frustration of many people who thought, well, we need to have this deal in Copenhagen. We didn't get it, so what are we going to do? We need to overcome this, but build on the momentum. We need to revise some of the networking strategies we have had, not only at the ecumenical movement, but also with the civil society at large, this global campaign for climate action, where the WCC sits in the board with Greenpeace, Oxfam, and others, that has launched this Tick, Tick, Tick campaign, with the Global Humanitarian Forum, who's also focusing on climate justice, with this new, at least last 2 or 3 years, interreligious concern, Religious for Peace, for the first time participated at a COP. We invited them to participate at some of our meetings, but they were not able because they came for a very short period of time. But we said we would continue to work together with this interfaith approach, and being aware that from our perspective, the struggle continues. We cannot stop. We cannot say the Copenhagen Accord is good. I don't think it is good. I think it is bad. But we need to continue struggling. Thank you.